That's it. I might have climbed to the side of her house and stolen a kiss, Elliot said. Is that how you scraped your hands? Thompson asked. Elliot held up his free hand. Yep. What about your knuckles? Fight Friday night after the game. Oh, the detective said. We were still feeling invincible after the game. Got into it with the wrestlers. Stupid guy stuff. I heard you beat Cruz Miller senseless. Is that true?
I got a little carried away, yeah.
Was it over Catherine? Thompson asked. We were both mouthing off. We're over it.
When did you leave Catherine's house last night?
Elliot moved around in his chair. Honesty meant risking the detective telling Mama that he'd stayed the night in the Juniper.
Elliot, Thompson prodded, what time did you leave Catherine's?
I can't remember, Elliot said finally.
You two aren't telling me something.
I can tell you now, it's best just to be honest in the first place. Otherwise, anything you say later will be questioned.
When we didn't divulge, he sighed.
Do you have any idea what time he left?
I shrugged. I didn't look at the clock. I'm sorry.
Tell me, Catherine, is Elliot a little too possessive for your taste? Maybe a little controlling?
I swallowed.
No. He just moved here, right? You two look awfully serious.
He stays with his aunt in the summers, I said. We've known each other for several years. Walking the tightrope between truth and lies was something I'd done many times, but in this case, Thompson had an agenda, and I wasn't sure if my half-truths were doing more harm than good. Thompson tapped his wrinkled index finger on Mrs. Mason's desk, his wedding ring catching the fluorescent light. He cradled his chin with his other hand. I kept my eyes on his thin hand, counting the liver spots, wondering if his wife knew he terrorized high school kids for sport. The way he watched Elliot made me think he was just getting started.
Anything else? Elliot asked. We should get back to class.
Detective Thompson was quiet for a while, and then he stood up abruptly.
Yes. Catherine, why don't you head back to class?
We stood, hand in hand.
Elliot, I'm going to have to ask you to come with me,
Thompson said. Elliot took a protective stance in front of me, holding me close.
What? Why? I need to ask you a few more questions. You can decline, but I'd just be back with a warrant. We can question you then.
A warrant for my arrest?
Elliot asked. Every muscle in his body was tense, as if he couldn't decide whether to run or attack.
Why?
Mrs. Mason stood, holding out her hands. Detective, I know you're not familiar with Elliot, but I think you're sensing possessiveness when Elliot is actually just very protective of Catherine. Her father passed away a few summers ago, and she and Elliot have a history together. He cares about her very much.
Thompson arched a brow. And Catherine has a history with Presley Brubaker. We've established that Elliot is very protective of Catherine.
Mrs. Mason shook her head.
No, you're twisting things. Elliot would never...
Will you come to the station with me, Mr. Youngblood? Or will I be seeing you at football practice with a sweet new pair of silver bracelets?
Thompson asked. Elliot looked down at me, then back at the detective, exhaling through his nose, his nostrils flaring. His expression was severe. I'd only seen that look on his face once before, the day we met.
I'll go,
he said simply. Detective Thompson's face lit up, and he patted Elliot on the shoulder.
Well then, Mrs. Mason, I might not be familiar with Mr. Youngblood now, but we are going to get to know each other real well this evening.
He gripped Elliot's arm, but I held on to him.
Wait! Wait a second, I said.
It's going to be okay.
Elliot kissed my forehead. Call my aunt. He fished in his pocket and handed me his car keys.
I don't know her number.
I do, Mrs. Mason said. Request a lawyer, Elliot. Don't say anything else until one arrives. Elliot nodded and then left with Detective Thompson. I followed a respectful distance behind, escorted by Mrs. Mason. I watched out the wall of windows at the front of the school while Thompson opened the back of his navy blue Crown Victoria. I touched the icy window, watching helplessly until Elliot and Thompson were out of sight. I turned to Mrs. Mason.
He has nothing to do with this.
Come back to my office. We'll find Lee's number. We should call her now. I nodded, following the counselor back to her office. I sat down in the seat I had just occupied minutes before. My knee bounced and I dug my thumbnail into my forearm while Mrs. Mason tapped on her computer, then picked up her phone.
Mrs. Youngblood?
Hi, it's Rebecca Mason. I'm afraid I have some bad news. Presley Brubaker has gone missing, and Detective Thompson from the Oak Creek Police Department has come to collect Elliot for questioning. He just took him to the station less than 5 minutes ago. Elliot asked that I call you. I could hear Lee panicking through the phone, firing off questions.
Mrs. Youngblood,
Lee,
I know,
he's a good boy. But I think you should call an attorney to meet Elliot at the station as soon as possible.
Yes,
I'm so sorry.
Yes,
goodbye. Mrs. Mason hung up the phone and then covered her eyes with one hand.
Becca,
Mr. Mason said, walking through the door. Mrs. Mason looked up, trying her best to keep it together, but when she saw her husband, tears welled up in her eyes and spilled over her cheeks. Mr. Mason rounded the desk and helped his wife to her feet, holding her tight as she tried not to cry. I fell into Mrs. Mason's line of sight, and she released her husband, straightening her blazer and skirt.
Catherine,
she cleared her throat.
Lee is on the way to the police station. John should be there soon.
They're calling Elliot an attorney. I want you to go to class. Sympathy touched her eyes. And I want you to try very hard not to worry. If anyone, and I mean anyone, bothers you about this, you come straight to me. Do you understand? I nodded. She wiped her cheeks with the back of her hand.
Good.
I have an appointment with Tatum, Anna Sue, and Bree in 10 minutes. Check in with me after lunch, please. I nodded, watching her stride out of her office, determined to hold the school together if needed. The walk to my locker from the office seemed to take twice as long as usual. I twisted the dial, but when I yanked, the door wouldn't open. The bell rang, and I tried again, desperate to avoid suspicious eyes and whispers. When I failed again, my bottom lip trembled.
Let me,
Sam said, yanking straight up on the latch. The lock released, and he pulled my locker open. I quickly switched out my books and slammed the door, twisting the dial again.
Maddie went home, Sam said. Can I walk you?
He looked around.
I should walk you.
I glanced over my shoulder, cowering under the accusatory glares of other students passing by. Word had already spread.
Thank you.
Sam kept me close, walking me across the commons to B Hall. The students glared at me and Sam, and I worried he would become a target, too. When we reached my World Lit class, Sam waved to me and went on to his class. I slipped behind my desk, unable to miss Mrs. McKinstry pausing to look at me before taking roll. I closed my eyes, holding Elliot's keys tight in my hand. Just a few more hours and I could go to him. Just a few more hours and...
Catherine!
Mrs. McKinstry said. I looked down, feeling warm liquid pool in my palm and drip down my wrist. Elliot's keys had punctured my hand. Mrs. McKinstry grabbed a paper towel and rushed over, forcing me to open my hand. She dabbed my palm, the white paper soaking up the crimson.
Are you okay?
I nodded.
Sorry.
Sorry? She asked, surprised.
What on earth do you have to be sorry about? Just go to the nurse. She'll get you cleaned up. I gathered my things and rushed out, relieved that I didn't have to suffer through an entire class with 25 pairs of eyes on the back of my head. The nurse's office was across from administration, just around the corner and 10 feet down from my locker. I stopped at 347, unable to take another step. Feeling Elliot's keys wadded with the paper towel, I turned on my heel, running toward the double doors that led to the parking lot. Chapter 27. Catherine. My worn black Converses looked painfully juvenile next to Lee's snakeskin stilettos. She sat with perfect posture, waiting in one of the 10 or so unpadded metal chairs that lined the main hall of the Oak Creek Police Department. The walls were a dirty tan, the matching baseboards scuffed with black and splattered with coffee and unknown stains. I counted 7 doors breaking up the monotony of the walls that bordered the hallway, most of their top halves taken up by plexiglass windows that were covered by cheap mini-blinds. The fluorescent lights buzzed above our heads, a reminder that the sunlight from the front windows only reached to the end of the hall. Occasionally an officer or two would pass us, each one watching with wary eyes, as if we were part of some intricate plan to help Elliot escape. I don't have to tell you that it's not a good idea to drive Elliot's vehicle without a license, Lee said, keeping her voice low. I cowered. Yes, it won't happen again. Well, she said, wiping her palms on her slacks, I'm sure Elliot doesn't mind. But next time, call me. I'll come. I didn't bother arguing that Lee should have come straight to the police station instead of detouring to give me a ride. Lee was in no mood for backtalk. John, Lee said, standing.
I got here as quick as I could. Is he still in there?
Lee nodded, her bottom lip trembling.
Has Kent made it?
Yes, he's been in there for about half an hour. Elliot's been in there twice as long. I'm not sure what's happening. They won't let me see him.
Did you call Kay?
Lee rubbed her forehead. She's on her way. John hugged her and then reached for me. I stood, letting him pull me in for a hug.
It's going to be okay, girls. We know Elliot had nothing to do with this.
Has she been found? I asked. John sighed and shook his head. He sat in the chair to my right, Lee to my left, turning me into a young blood sandwich and offering some of the safety I felt when Elliot was close. John turned to his phone, typing arrest process into the search engine bar. John, Lee said, reaching over me to tap her husband's knee. She gestured to the right, and we turned to see Presley's parents leaving one of the offices, the mini-blinds swaying back and forth. Mrs. Brubaker was dabbing the skin beneath her eyes with a wadded tissue, Presley's dad guiding his wife with his arm around her shoulders. They stopped, seeing us sitting in the hallway. Mrs. Brubaker sniffed, staring at us in disbelief. The officer said, holding up her arm to motion for the Brubakers to continue.
This way.
After several seconds, the officer finally convinced the couple to proceed.
It's going to be okay, honey, John said.
He was talking to his wife, but she hadn't said anything, so I was surprised when she responded as if she had.
Don't tell me it's going to be okay. Of all the kids in that school, it's Elliot who was brought back to the police station? Lee, John warned. We both know if he was my sister's son instead of yours, he wouldn't be here.
John stared at the door across from him, his eyebrows pulling in a fraction of an inch.
Elliot's a good boy.
Yes, he is, which is why he shouldn't be here.
Catherine?
John asked, turning to me.
What happened at school?
I took in a breath. I couldn't tell them Elliot was taken into custody because of his behavior at the school. John and Lee would want to know why he was being so protective of me.
But a part of me wondered why Elliot wasn't more surprised to hear about Presley. I knew he didn't care for her, but as laid back as Elliot was, even he should have been shocked to hear about Presley's disappearance. "Well," I began. I didn't want to lie. The detective questioned him. They don't know where he walked after he left my house. I think that's why they're suspicious. I wanted to tell Lee he'd spent the night, but I didn't want to have to get into why. I considered letting her just assume he'd stayed there to do what most teenagers did, but I couldn't say it. Lee fidgeted. Last night? We were out. When we got home, I assumed he was in bed.
Lee, don't say that again. John said. The answer is, Elliot came straight home.
Dear God, Lee whispered. This looks bad, doesn't it? We haven't been on a date in 3 years, and the first time we go, we needed to be our nephew's alibi. Alibi. The word was familiar but foreign. The double doors at the end of the hall opened, and Elliot walked out with a man in a gray suit. Elliot looked flushed, his eyes reflecting the stress and anger that had built up over the past 3 hours. Lee stood and threw her arms around Elliot. He stood there without emotion until his gaze fell on me. "Are you all right?" Lee asked, pulling away to look him over. "Did they hurt you? Kent? Is he okay?" she asked. Kent straightened his tie.
"He's not officially a suspect yet, but he will be if they find a body. They certainly think he has something to do with her disappearance."
He looked to me.
"Are you Catherine?"
"Leave her alone, Kent,"
Elliot warned. He was shaking with anger.
"Let's go outside,"
Kent said. Elliot helped me with my coat and then curved his arm around my shoulders, guiding me to the station parking lot. We walked until we reached Lee's sedan. Kent zipped up his coat, looking around at the various cars in the lot. His breath was visible, puffing out and then disappearing into the night air.
"Tell us," John said. "Are they charging him with something?"
"I didn't do anything,"
Elliot said, his cheeks beat red.
"I know," John growled. "Let me talk, damn it."
"They haven't found Presley,"
Kent said.
"It seems she disappeared without a trace. With no witnesses or body, there are no charges to make."
I leaned against the car, thinking about the way Kent said, "body." I imagined Presley lying lifeless in a ditch somewhere, her alabaster skin covered in dead grass and smudged with dirt.
"Are you okay?"
Elliot asked. "I'm just dizzy."
"I should get her home,"
Elliot said.
"We're all going home,"
John said.
"That's a good idea,"
Kent said, aggravated. He jingled the keys in his suit pocket before pulling them out.
"Detective Thompson is out for blood. He thinks something isn't right with Elliot and Catherine. He said he has a hunch."
He scoffed.
"It is my professional advice that you take Elliot straight home. He shouldn't be walking around in the dark anymore. You know, just in case anyone else goes missing."
"This is serious, Kent," Lee snapped.
"Oh, I know. And it's not over until that girl is found. And even then, it still might not be over. His anger isn't helping Lee. Make sure he gets a handle on that."
"Elliot," Lee said, as disappointed as she was surprised. "What happened in there?" Elliot looked ashamed.
"I tried. I tried everything, but they wouldn't let up. One officer kept putting his finger in my face. After an hour, I backhanded it away."
"Oh, for the love of—" She saw Elliot's expression and touched his shoulder. "It's okay. It's going to be okay."
"Why are you letting a cop put his finger in Elliot's face?"
John asked Kent. Kent sighed.
"I told him to stop."
"You riding with me or Aunt Lee?"
John asked. "I drove his car here," I said.
"You did?"
Elliot asked, surprised.
"He shouldn't be driving. Not after the night he's had,"
John said. Elliot gestured to the sedan.
will fit better in Aunt Lee's car.
John nodded, seeming shocked Elliot didn't put up a fight.
See you at home.
Elliot opened my door, and I slid into Lee's back seat. The leather was cold against my jeans, but it subsided when Elliot sat beside me and pulled me close. Lee slammed the door and twisted the ignition. A small dream catcher hung from her key ring, the light glinting off the metal as it dangled just above her knee.
I'll drop Catherine off.
No, Elliot blurted out. I need to talk to her first.
So the house, then? Lee asked, exasperated.
Yes, please, he said.
I knew how he felt. There was so much to say, but I didn't feel comfortable discussing any of it in the back seat of Lee's car. Elliot held me close, tense and still shaking from his time at the police station. I couldn't imagine what he'd been through, the things they'd asked and accused him of. Lee slowed as she turned into the drive, waiting for the automatic garage door to roll up enough for her to pull in.
Don't leave the house, Lee warned as we walked inside.
I have to walk her home,
Elliot said, stopping just inside the threshold. Lee closed the door and locked it, pointing at her nephew's chest. She was half his size, but intimidating.
You listen to me, Elliot Youngblood. I'm either taking her home or she's staying here, but you are not to leave this house. Do you understand me?
I didn't do anything wrong, Aunt Lee.
She sighed.
I know. I'm just trying to keep you safe.
Your mom should be here in a couple of hours. Elliot nodded, watching Lee disappear down the hall, and then took my hand, leading me to his bedroom in the basement. The old springs in Elliot's bed squeaked when I sat on the edge, wrapping my arms around my middle. Elliot draped a blanket around my shoulders, and it was then I realized I was the one shaking. He knelt in front of me, gazing up at me with his warm, russet eyes.
It wasn't me.
I know, I said simply.
They had me answering the same questions over and over, in ways that had me so confused that at one point I was afraid I'd gone crazy and wasn't remembering right. But I know I didn't see Presley. I wasn't anywhere near her house. It wasn't me.
He was saying the words more to himself than to me. Where did you go? I asked. After you left practice? He stood and shrugged.
I walked around, trying to think of what to do about leaving. I can't not be with you, Catherine. I can't leave you at that house alone. You refused to leave, so I was trying to think of a solution. You keep saying you're not good for me, that you're trying to protect me. You even tried to break up with me once. I was trying to clear my head and think of some way to talk you out of it.
You're a person of interest in a disappearance, Elliot. This is the last thing.
It's the only thing,
he said, working to rein in his temper. He took a deep breath, walked away a few steps, and then returned.
I was sitting in that white room with white floors and white furniture, feeling like I was suffocating. I was thirsty, hungry, and afraid. I just kept thinking of all the little lights on our street and what it felt like to walk down it holding your hand in and out of the darkness. Nothing they could say could change that. Nothing anyone can do can take that away from us. Except you. And you love me. I know you do. I just can't figure out why you won't let me in.
I've told you.
Not enough!
He dropped to his knees, grabbing mine.
Trust me, Catherine. I swear I won't make you regret it.
I stared at him, watching the worry and desperation swarm in his eyes. I turned toward the stairs.
Does what's going on in there have to do with Presley?
He asked. My mouth fell open and I pushed his hands off my knees. You think I have something to do with this?
No,
he said, holding his hands up.
I would never think that, Catherine. Come on.
I stood. But you still asked. I let the blanket fall to the ground and headed for the stairs.
Catherine, don't leave. Catherine! He called.
When my foot touched the first step, a loud crash sounded behind me, and I whipped around. Elliot had punched his new bathroom door. His fist went straight through the flimsy, hollow wood, and then he reared back again. As his fist landed another blow, I ran up the stairs, yanking the door open to see Lee standing on the other side, eyes wide. She passed me, rushing down to stop Elliot from trashing his room. I pushed out the front door. Winter blasted me in the face, and my lungs felt on fire with every icy breath. One of the last lit street lights highlighted a snowflake as it danced in front of me on its way to the ground. I stopped, glancing up to see large flakes falling around me, clinging to my hair and settling on my shoulders. I closed my eyes, feeling the frozen pieces kiss my face. Snow had a way of silencing the world, enticing me to stay submerged in it. The thin layer of snow sticking to the ground crunched under my feet as I took my first step toward the juniper, away from the person who was my island, away from the dangerous things that lived outside my bedroom door. Nothing was safe anymore. Maybe nothing ever was.
Chapter 28. Catherine. Mrs. Mason twisted her number two pencil between her fingers, waiting for me to speak. She'd remarked on the dark circles under my eyes. I sat in the scratchy chair in front of her desk, swallowed by my puffy coat and scarf. Mrs. Mason had the same concerned expression she wore the day she'd called DHS on Mama. "Things aren't great," I said simply. She leaned forward. "You went to the police station last night. How did that go?"
"It went."
A ghost of a smile touched her lips.
"Is Elliot okay?"
I sank further into the seat. It would be so easy to expose the juniper, but to do that, I'd have to betray Mama. Althea was right. They couldn't continue as they had without me. But should they? I gazed up at Mrs. Mason from under my lashes.
"He's okay," I said simply. "They were pretty hard on him."
Mrs. Mason sighed. "I was worried about that."
"What do you think?"
"Do I think he has something to do with Presley's disappearance? No."
"He likes you. A lot."
"You don't think he'd be angry about the way she treated you? I heard she was pretty awful."
"Why didn't you tell me, Catherine? Of all the hours we spent in here together, you couldn't tell me Presley Brubaker was bullying you?"
"Elliot wouldn't hurt Presley. She's done all kinds of things to me since I've met him, and he's no more than mouthed off to her a few times. He's been in scuffles with other guys, but he'd never hurt a girl. Never."
"I believe you," Mrs. Mason said.
"Is there anything you're not telling me?"
When I didn't respond, she clasped her hands together.
"Catherine, I can see you're tired. You're stressed. You're pulling away. Let me help you." I rubbed the heaviness from my eyes. The clock said 8:45. The day was going to drag on, especially knowing Elliot would want to talk. Maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he was tired of failing to climb over all the walls I'd built. I hadn't seen him since leaving his house the night before.
"Catherine, you can't help me," I said, standing. "First hour is already over. I should go."
"Detective Thompson wants me to report to him. I can't tell him what we talked about, of course, but he wants me to email him an assessment of your emotional state."
I frowned.
What?
"Once you leave, I have to email him. They plan to bring you in for questioning."
"We haven't done anything. Not liking Presley isn't a crime. Why don't they concentrate on finding her instead of us?"
I yelled.
Mrs. Mason sat back in her chair.
"Well, that's the most honesty I've seen from you."
That's incredibly brave. Honesty requires vulnerability. How did that feel? I paused, feeling more manipulated than anything else. Send Thompson whatever you want. I'm leaving. I pulled the strap of my backpack over my shoulder and yanked on the door. Mrs. Rosalski and Dr. Augustine watched me storm out, as did the handful of student aides. A yellow note was taped to my locker with the word CONFESS written in block letters. I ripped it off, wadded it up, and threw it to the ground, returning my attention to my locker. I yanked up on the handle, but the door wouldn't open. I tried my combination again and again, feeling dozens of eyes on the back of my head. I tried once more and yanked again. Nothing. Hot tears welled in my eyes. An arm appeared over my right shoulder, turned the dial, and then yanked hard. The latch released, and I grabbed Elliot's arm with both hands, feeling my breath catch in my throat. He pressed his right cheek against my left, his skin feeling like sunshine on mine. He smelled like soap and serenity, his voice warming me like a soft blanket.
Are you okay?
I shook my head. He was important. I should protect him the way he did me, but I wasn't strong enough to let go. Elliot was anchoring me to everything normal I had left in the world. Elliot let go of my locker and wrapped his arm across my collarbones, holding on to my shoulder, his cheek still against mine.
I'm so sorry about last night, Catherine. I swore I'd never do that again. You're the last person I'd want to see that. I was tired and raw, and I lost it. I would never, ever lay a hand on you. Just doors, apparently. And trees. And Cruz Miller. Aunt Lee says I need a punching bag in my room.
I turned, burying my face into his chest. He wrapped his arms around me, holding me tight. His warm lips pressed against my hair, and then he pressed his cheek against the same spot.
I'm so sorry,
he repeated. I shook my head, feeling tears run down my nose. I couldn't speak, feeling more vulnerable in that hour than I had in 3 years.
How was it at home?
The hall cleared, and the bell rang, but we remained. I'm just... Tears overflowed onto my cheeks. I'm very tired. Elliot's eyes danced while the wheels in his head turned.
I'm staying tonight.
I don't want you to get hurt. He pressed his forehead against mine.
Do you know what it would do to me if something happened to you? I'd cut off my throwing hand to keep you safe.
I held him tighter. So we'll keep each other safe. The engine of Madison's mother's Nissan hummed quietly as it idled in front of the Juniper. Madison picked at the steering wheel, recounting her minutes with Detective Thompson. Once my dad came in, she said, narrowing her eyes. He changed his tune, but, oh, he was sure I knew something. Yes, I think she bashed out my headlights. That doesn't mean I'd kidnap her or kill her or do whatever happened to her. Thompson was relentless, I said, staring down Juniper Street. The wind was blowing the branches of the bare trees, making me shiver. Yes, that! He said he might call us to the station. Me, you, even Sam. But he is obsessed with Elliot. Do you think it's because he's Cherokee? His Aunt Lee seems to think so. I'm sure she's right. Madison growled. He's the best of us. Elliot is a great guy. Everyone loves him. Even Scotty Neal. And Elliot took his quarterback position on the football team. They don't love him now, I said. We've been getting harassed with anonymous notes all day. Rumors are spreading. They think because we were questioned, we did it. Whatever it is. Some people think Presley is dead. Do you think she's dead? I asked. Madison grew quiet. I don't know. I hope not. I hope she's okay. I really do. Me too. If she was taken, it wasn't us, but it was someone. He's still out there. That freaks me out. Maybe that's why everyone is so hell-bent on blaming us. If they know it's us, then they'll feel safer somehow. I guess, I said. Thanks for the ride home. You're welcome. Are you going to the game this weekend? It's going to be weird cheering and having fun with Presley still missing. Some people are saying they're going to hold a vigil before the game. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's appropriate. I don't want to leave Elliot alone, though. We'll go together. I nodded and pulled on the handle, stepping out of the Nissan, the dead grass crunching beneath my shoes as I walked from the curb to the sidewalk. The ground was dusted with billions of tiny specks of Oklahoma snow, much of what wasn't blown away settling into the cracks of the concrete. I stopped at the black iron gate, gazing up at the juniper. Madison's chipper goodbye was a jarring contrast, startling me for half a second before I waved. The Nissan pulled away, and I reached for the gate's handle, pressing down and hearing the familiar whine of the hinges as it opened and then again when the springs pulled shut. I wished for Althea or Poppy or even Willow to be on the other side of the door. Anyone but Duke or Mama. Baby, baby, baby. I sighed and smiled. Althea, give me that coat and come in here for some hot cocoa. It'll warm you right up. Did you walk home? No, I said, hanging my coat on a vacant hook by the door. I carried my backpack to the island and set it next to a stool before climbing up. Althea set a steaming cup of hot chocolate in front of me, complete with a handful of marshmallows. She wiped her hands on her apron and leaned on the counter, resting her chin in her hand. Althea, why do you stay here? Why don't you stay with your daughter? Althea stood, busying herself with the dishes in the sink. Well, it's that man of hers. He says the house is too small. It's just a dinky two-bedroom, you see. But I've offered to sleep on the couch. I used to when the babies were tiny. She began cleaning more vigorously. She was uncomfortable, and I looked up, wondering if Duke was around. The guest seemed on edge when he was close. Or maybe he was close because they were on edge. How's the cocoa? Althea asked. Good, I said, making a show of taking a sip. How's school? Today was long. I didn't sleep well last night, and Mrs. Mason called me in first thing. Oh? Was she asking questions again? There's a girl at school who's missing. She was asking about her. Oh? Who? Presley Brubaker. Oh, her. You said she's gone missing? I nodded, warming my hands on the mug. No one saw anything. There's a detective in town who thinks it's because I didn't get along with her that maybe I had something to do with it. And what does Mrs. Mason say? She asked me a lot of questions today. The detective asked her to send him some kind of report. Althea curled her lip, seeming disgusted.
She's the one who called the DHS on your mama before, ain't she?
She was just worried.
Is she worried now?
Althea asked. Probably. She's worried about Elliot. I am too.
Lord knows you are. I'm glad you forgave him. You're happier when you're getting along. Forgiveness is good. It heals the soul.
I pushed him away for a while. Just like I did Minka and Owen. I paused. I thought it would be safer for him if I did.
She puffed out a laugh. Minka and Owen? Been a long time since you've talked about those two. They weren't good for you.
But you think Elliot is?
I like to see you smile. And when you talk about that boy, your whole face lights up.
Althea, Mama was outside the other night. She was in her nightgown. Do you know why?
She shook her head. Your mama's been strange lately.
I just sit back and watch.
I nodded, taking another sip. So, do you talk to Mama? Has she told you why she's been so different?
I spoke to her at the meeting.
The meeting about me. She nodded. You wouldn't let anyone hurt me, right, Althea?
Don't be silly.
Not even Mama? Althea stopped cleaning.
Your Mama would never hurt you. She wouldn't let anyone hurt you either. She's proven it over and over. Don't you disrespect her to me. Never.
She fled the room as if she'd been called. She rushed up the stairs, and a door slamming echoed through the juniper. I covered my eyes with my hand. I'd just offended my only ally. Chapter 29. Catherine. Madison held on to my arm, waiting for the Mudcats to break from time out. We were down to the last few seconds of the fourth quarter of the championship game on the 20-yard line. The bleachers were packed, and we were tied with the Kingfisher Yellow Jackets, 35-35. Coach Peckham was in a deep conversation with Elliot, whose eyes were focused on his coach's every word. Once they clapped and jogged out onto the field, the crowd erupted.
"They're not going for the field goal," Mrs. Mason said, covering her mouth.
"What does that mean?" I asked. Madison squeezed my arm, watching Sam bang Elliot's shoulder pad with the side of his fist.
"It means they have 4 seconds to make this play, or we go into overtime, and Kingfisher has the ball."
I looked up at the scouts in the press box. Some were on the phone, some writing notes. Elliot stood behind Sam, made a call, and then Sam hiked the ball. The receivers spread out, and Elliot took his time, despite the screams and pressure from the stands.
"Oh my God! Get open!"
Madison yelled at the receivers. Elliot took off, carrying the ball toward the end zone, and Madison and Mrs. Mason began jumping up and down on each side of me. Elliot jumped over one yellow jacket, then a second, and seeing he was unable to enter the end zone on the right, spun around and leaped, landing with the ball just inside the line. The referees lifted their hands in the air, and the team and fans detonated. Madison and Mrs. Mason were screaming in my ear 1 second, and the next we were running down the steps, jumping over the railing and running onto the field with the team. Everyone was smiling and bouncing and screaming. It was a sea of happiness, and I was in the middle trying to make my way to Elliot. He was ahead above the crowd, searching faces. I lifted my hand, shooting my fingers into the air. He saw them and tried parting the sea to get to me.
"Catherine!"
he yelled. I did my best to push through, but Elliot got to me first, lifting me off my feet with one arm to plant a kiss on my mouth.
"You did it," I said, excited. "If they don't give you a scholarship now, they're crazy."
He stared at me for a moment.
"What?"
I asked, laughing.
"I've just never seen you so happy. It's kind of amazing."
I pressed my lips together, trying not to grin like an idiot.
"I love you."
He laughed once and then squeezed me tight, burying his face in my neck. I pressed my cheek against his wet hair and kissed his forehead. The crowd was still celebrating, keeping the local police force's hands full as they tried to keep control. The other side of the stadium was quickly scattering, and Kingfisher's buses were already started and warming up.
"Young blood,"
Coach Peckham called. Elliot winked at me.
"Meet you at my car."
He kissed me on the cheek one last time before setting me down and pushing through the crowd to reach the rest of the team in the center of the field. I bounced around like a pinball until I was pushed to the outer edge of the mob. Parents and students were passing out white candles with white cardboard wax catchers. The students settled down as the candles spread. Mrs. Brubaker froze in front of me, a white candle in her hand.
It's a vigil for Presley.
"Thank you," I said, taking the candle. Mrs. Brubaker attempted a smile, the corners of her mouth trembling. When she failed, she started handing out candles to other students.
"You are disgusting," Tatum said, standing a few feet away in her cheer uniform. "How can you hold that candle knowing what you know?"
"What do I know?" I asked.
"Where she is!"
Tatum shouted. The people around us turned toward the noise.
"Yeah,"
Bree said.
"Where is she, Catherine? What did you and Elliot do to her?"
"You can't be serious," I snapped. "Come on," Madison said, hooking her arm in mine. "You don't have to take this."
"Get out!"
Bree shouted, pointing toward the parking lot.
"Elliot did something to Presley. He's not a hero. He's a murderer."
"Bree," Tatum said, trying to shush her. "It's not Elliot's fault. It was her." She took a step toward me, her eyes glossing over. "It was you." One of the dads held Tatum back.
"Okay, girls. What's going on here?"
Bree pointed to me.
"Catherine hated Presley."
She pointed to Elliot.
"And he got rid of Presley for her."
"Is this true?" a mom asked.
"No,"
I insisted, feeling dozens of eyes on me. Murmuring spread throughout the crowd, and the cheering died down. Tatum's mom held her to her side.
"You shouldn't be here."
"Why not?" Madison asked. "She didn't do anything wrong."
"They need to leave,"
someone shouted.
"Get them out."
"Get out! Leave! Stop congratulating him! He did something to her, to Presley Brubaker! Murderer!"
"Oh my God," Madison said. Students were shoving Elliot, and he was shoving back.
"Leave him alone,"
I cried.
"Let's go, Catherine. Catherine,"
Madison said, pulling me. I could see the fear in her eyes. The parents began to boo Elliot, too. Uncle John pushed through the crowd, and once he reached Elliot, he held up his hands, trying to defuse the situation. But soon he was pushing back dads and yelling in their faces when they got too close. Elliot stood behind him, but was still getting pushed from every direction.
"Stop!"
Lee cried from the edge of the crowd.
"Stop it!"
Kay was yelling at another mom and then shoved her down. The lights shined down on the mob, spotlighting the sudden change. Those still in the stands stopped to stare at the chaos on the field. It wasn't a war. Wars had sides. This was emotional retaliation. Elliot looked for me, motioning for me to go to the gate while he was still getting screamed at and shoved. Madison pulled on me, and I watched Elliot over my shoulder as she dragged me away. The police grabbed Elliot and pushed him and his Uncle John through the crowd, shielding them from the spit and wadded rosters. Even the police were having to yell and make threats to get through. All it took was a few reminders about Presley, and in seconds Elliot went from being a small-town hero to the unwanted villain. We followed the police and Elliot, stopping only when we reached the stadium gate.
"I wouldn't come back in,"
one of the officers said.
"That's a big crowd, and emotions are high."
Elliot frowned, but nodded. Kay and Lee rushed over to where we stood with John. Kay hugged Elliot, and John hugged Lee to his side.
"Are you okay?"
Kay asked, hugging her son.
"Yeah,"
Elliot said, noticing that the collar of his jersey was ripped.
"They just started attacking me."
"Come on," Lee said. "We should go."
"I'm going to take Catherine home first," Elliot said.
"I can take her,"
Madison offered. Elliot looked to me, worry in his eyes. "I'm okay. Go ahead. I'll see you later," I said, pushing up on the balls of my feet to kiss the corner of his mouth. Lee and Kay walked with Elliot, ushering him to his car. He kept his eyes on me, not looking forward until Kay said something to him. Madison looked back at the crowd. The stadium lights dimmed, and hundreds of tiny glowing lights were visible. The students and parents began singing a hymn, and Madison tugged on my coat.
"I feel bad for saying this,
that it's creepy that they just tried to attack Elliot and are now singing Amazing Grace. It is a little creepy. They were ready to tear him apart, and now they're calm, standing there like pod people. Let's go. You're sure you don't want to wait for Sam? I asked. I'll text him. We'll meet up later. I walked with her to her Forerunner, the brand new headlights erasing the evidence of what Presley and the clones had done. Madison pulled out of the parking lot and drove toward the Juniper. This town has gone nuts, she said, her eyes wide. Seconds before, they were cheering for him. I'm glad the cops got him out of there. It could have been a lot worse. I shook my head. It's like they forgot to blame him until the candles came out. Poor Elliot, Madison said. His teammates just stood there and let it happen when he won that game for them. He won for the whole town. I just feel so awful for him. Her pity made my heart sink. Elliot didn't deserve any of this. He was just having the best moment of his life, and in an instant, it changed. In Yukon, he was a star. They grieved when he left. Now, because of me, he was stuck in a place where most people thought he was guilty of murder, and worse, they thought he was getting away with it. Me too. I feel bad for you too, Catherine. He's not the only one taking heat for this. And I know you didn't do it. I just wish they'd find her or find who did it. Madison parked in the Juniper's driveway. Madison hugged me, and I thanked her for the ride, following the black iron fence that protected the neighborhood from the Juniper to the gate. The Forerunner backed out into the street and headed back toward the school. I pushed through and made my way into the house, pausing for a moment in the foyer to listen for a few seconds before climbing the stairs to the second floor. The hinges of my bedroom door whined when I opened it, and I leaned back against the old wood, looking up. Tears threatened to fill my eyes, but I blinked them back. The music box on my dresser plinked out a few notes, and I walked over to it, opening the lid and greeting the ballerina inside. I twisted the crank and listened to the sweet song, letting the anger and fear melt away. Elliot would be here soon, away from the angry mob, away from the flickering candles, and one day he would be away from Oak Creek, safe from the accusing eyes of everyone we knew. Rocks tapped against my window, and I lowered the music box, walking over and lifting the window. Elliot climbed in, with a black and gray duffel bag hanging from a long strap across his chest. He stood and pulled his hoodie off, his hair pulled back into a low braid, his cheeks still flushed from the game.
I went to Aunt Lee's to pick up a few things and then came straight here. Is it okay if I take a shower?
He asked, keeping his voice low. Yeah, of course, I whispered, pointing across the room. He nodded once, offering a nervous smile before taking his duffel into the bathroom and closing the door. A few seconds later, the pipes began to whine. I looked up, wondering who could hear. The music box still played, the dancer twirling. Elliot didn't mention it, and I wondered how upset he was about the game. A part of me worried that at some point he'd stop believing that loving me was worth it. Less than 10 minutes later, Elliot opened the door wearing a fresh T-shirt and red baseball shorts, holding something small in his hands. He padded to my bed in his bare feet and leaned over, tying leather strands to the head of my bed, letting the small hoop with a woven web inside hang over my pillow.
It's a dream catcher. My mom made this one for me when I was little. I thought you could use it.
He slid under the covers, shivering.
Is it always this cold in here?
I stared at the beautiful shapes inside the circle, unable to look away. Mama's been keeping the thermostat lower to help with bills. She turns it up when we have new guests. You've had that since you were little?
New guests?
Other than our regulars. Elliot watched me for a moment and then lifted the covers, patting the space next to him.
Since I was a baby, It was in my crib.
I tightened my robe. Maybe we should, I walked over to the foot of the bed, gripping the iron rails. Elliot hopped up, moved my dresser against the door, and then helped me move my full-size bed against it. The panic that overwhelmed me with every sound was crippling. I'd stop and have to summon every bit of courage within me to continue. Once we finished, I waited for a door to creak, a board to complain, anything that would signal movement outside my bedroom door. Nothing.
Okay?
He asked. I crawled under the covers next to Elliot. The sheets were cold for less than a minute, reacting to Elliot's body heat. Having him here was like adding an electric blanket, and I kicked off my fuzzy socks, wondering if my fleece pants and long-sleeved thermal shirt would get too hot in the middle of the night. I lay on my stomach, holding my pillow and facing Elliot. He reached over, gently pulling my chin until my lips were against his. We'd kissed dozens of times before, but this time his hand slid down my thigh, and he hooked my knee at his hip. I melted against him, a warm sensation forming in my chest and spreading to the rest of my body. Elliot, I whispered, pulling away. Thank you for doing this, but...
I know why I'm here,
he said, tucking his hands under the pillow.
Sorry, you can sleep. I won't let anything bad happen to you. I promise.
You can't promise that. Just like tonight. Bad things happen whether we want them to or not.
I don't care about that.
How? How can you not? What they did was awful.
You've spent 2 years fending for yourself inside the Juniper and at school. I can handle a few more months of school.
He hesitated.
Catherine, what was it like after your dad died?
I sighed. Lonely. Minka and Owen tried to come over a lot at first, but I'd just turn them away. Eventually, I stopped answering the door, and they stopped trying. They got angry. That made it a little easier. It was hard to ignore them when they were sad.
Why did you stop letting them in?
I couldn't let anyone in.
I know I'm not supposed to ask why.
Then please don't. Elliot smiled. He reached over, sliding his fingers between mine. Elliot?
Yeah?
Do you ever think not loving me would be easier?
Never. Not once.
He settled back against the headboard and pulled me against him, resting his chin on top of my head.
That's something I can promise.
Catherine!
Poppy called from downstairs.
Coming!
I yelled, pulling a brush through my hair a few times before hurrying down the steps. Monday mornings were always hectic, but especially when Poppy was at the Juniper. I smiled when I saw her sitting in the kitchen alone. She looked unhappy, and it didn't take long to see why.
No breakfast this morning?
I asked, looking around. Other than a tray with remnants of a ham sandwich and grape stems, there were no eggs, no sausage, not even toast. Poppy shook her head, her curls frizzy and tangled.
I'm hungry.
I frowned. It was the first time Mama had missed breakfast since we'd opened.
How did you sleep?
I asked, already knowing the answer. The thin skin beneath Poppy's eyes was purple.
There were noises. What kind of noises?
I pulled out a pan from the cabinet beneath the stove and then opened the refrigerator.
No bacon, no eggs.
I frowned. Mama hadn't been shopping either.
What about a bagel?
Poppy nodded. Butter or cream cheese? She shrugged.
We have strawberry cream cheese,
I said, taking it out of the bottom drawer. I bet you'll like that. I left her alone in the kitchen to search the pantry. The shelves were nearly bare except for a box of Cheerios, instant rice, some sauces, a few cans of vegetables, and, yes, bagels. I returned to the kitchen with the bag of bagels in hand, but my celebration was short-lived. The grocery list I'd made was still stuck to the refrigerator with a magnet. I was going to have to go shopping after school, and I wasn't